Good morning, everyone. Thank you for sticking around through many hours of learning. I want to, first of all, it's great to be here. So honored that Nechama invited me. I was a graduate of the first class of GPATS before it was even called GPATS, and that was 15 years ago. So it's wonderful to have a reunion and have women from GPATS speaking and sharing Torah. And I want to acknowledge Rebbetzin Krause's presence and my aunt, the original Lisa Septimus, who is now Lisa Wiener. I hope I do the name justice. So, back when I was in GPATS and still single and a young religious woman, hopefully still young, but younger, I was very excited and idealistic about all the mitzvot that I was involved in. And during the time I was in college, I had become accustomed to going to Minyan and davening three times a day, and even mitzvot that I was exempt from, as women are patur from mitzvot aseh shezman grama, I strove to take those mitzvot on and to, you know, fill my life with learning and mitzvah observance. And so Purim was no different, as I would enjoy the Megillah, knowing that I was obligated in Megillah, as all Jews, as men and women, are obligated equally, until I started to have children. I was living in Riverdale at the time, and every Purim, the pressure would build. First of all, the pressure that started to come with making beautiful Purim baskets, and I'm not really an artistic person, and I didn't necessarily enjoy that. But beyond that, just the pressure of fulfilling my obligation in Megillah. When I had an infant and I was sleep deprived, rather than try to go to the 10:30 Megillah reading for women, though that seemed very nice to have one, I wanted to go earlier so I could go to sleep earlier. And I tried to bring my infant and pray that she wouldn't cry in the middle of Megillah reading and I wouldn't have to walk out, and was anxious the whole time. The worst year I remember once, actually going to three different Megillah readings on Purim night, because I had missed a word or I had to walk out in the ninth perek of the Megillah. And for me, it was very troubling, first of all because I took my obligations seriously, but also because I was one to always enjoy life, enjoy mitzvot. I didn't want to come to see Megillah as a burden. As life progressed and I moved on, I realized, you know, this isn't actually something that's unique to Megillah. The balance of life with various obligations became a struggle that permeated other areas or other times. Just trying to fulfill my obligation to daven, forget three times a day with a minyan, but even just to get through an uninterrupted Shemona Esrei, or not create a hefsek, not create a break in my davening, became challenging. And I also started to notice that perhaps this was not unique to women, that this was a challenge trying to have a perfect mitzvah in an imperfect world was a challenge that men faced as well. Because as time moved on and our lives became busier and we were trying to, in every moment, fill our days with work, family, text messages, emails, this and that, it has become very challenging for people to devote the proper attention and space for the mitzvot that they are obligated in or are trying to fulfill. So what I wanted to explore today is what's really required of us. What do mitzvot demand? What level of attention, what level of kavanah is demanded in one's mitzvah observance? And particularly when we get to Megillah, how does Megillah fit into that picture? So first of all, I'll just throw out the question. When you think of what's required of a mitzvah, do you think kavanah, intention, is it required of mitzvot, and what does it even mean? What type of kavanah? Anyone want to share a thought? Doing any mitzvot. It can be taking lulav and etrog, it can be davening, it can... Okay, so explain.
By definition, it's something with kavanah.
Okay.
Because something that said it's chafetz mitzvah, you pick up the lulav, you know, it's better if you have kavanah, but they think you get out, you know, you fulfill it without.
Okay, so you're saying everything is dependent on what type of mitzvah you're doing, and of course we're going to get to that, and you're correct. And when with the avodah shebalev, what type of kavanah would be required? Okay, so what you... Yeah.
If I remember, I think the Rambam has a list of... This is what's ideal, if you can't do this. Eventually it says, if you can't do anything better, focus on Yerushalayim.
Okay, on certain aspects of tefillah.
Right.
Yeah.
She said that the Rambam has a list of levels of focus that one can have in tefillah. Okay, so what we're hearing is there's not one solid answer to this question of what is required of our mitzvah observance, because all mitzvot are not equal. Mitzvot are different, and therefore what is demanded upon us when we do certain mitzvot is different as well. So let's look at the main Talmudic source when it comes to mitzvot tzrichot kavanah to kind of begin our exploration. There are a few gemarot that discuss this, but this is the sort of meatiest of the gemaras. Kafu v'achal matzah yatsa. Amar Rava zoto meret hatokei lashir yatsa. Alma kasava Rava mitzvot ein srichot kavana. So the Gemara says that if a man was forced to eat matzah, he didn't, you know, want to, he wasn't trying to perform the mitzvah, he still fulfills his mitzvah of matzah. And Rava says, relating to this, that one who blows shofar not for the purpose of fulfilling the mitzvah of shofar, but rather for the purpose of hearing a song, hearing a trumpet sound, etc., he also fulfills her mitzvah. And the Gemara says this must mean that Rava believes mitzvot do not require kavana. Mitzvot do not require any intention. Relating to this, we have a braita. Tashma haya over acharei beit hakneset o shehaya beito samuch lebeit kneset v'shama kol shofar o kol megillah im kiven libo yatsa v'im lav lo yatsa. So this at first seems to be an objection to what we've just said. The Gemara just asserted that mitzvot do not require any intention, any concentration. And yet, we are told that if one lives right next to a Beit Knesset, or one is passing by a Beit Knesset, and they happen to hear Megillah, or they happen to hear shofar being blown, they only fulfill their obligation if they intend to. So the Gemara asks here, my love in kiven lafseit, doesn't this imply that what he has to have intention for is to be yotze, is to fulfill his obligation in the mitzvah? love lishmala. Now, this doesn't prove that you need kavana. This doesn't prove that you need to have intention to fulfill the mitzvah. Because when it says, in kivein latzeit yatsa, that if he had intention, he fulfills his obligation, it means simply if he had intention to listen. You know, you could be walking by a conversation, or you could be hearing, there could be a song playing on the radio, and you could physically, you could be in a position where you would hear it, but sometimes we don't even process that it's happening. So what the Gemara is suggesting here is not that you have to have intention, I am fulfilling the mitzvah of Megillah, or I am fulfilling the mitzvah of shofar, but rather you just have to have intention, oh, there's a shofar sounding. Oh, the Megillah is being read. I am hearing it. I am processing it. And then it says, wait a minute, the Hashama, but the guy heard it, and he says, Sabur Chamor Ba'almahu. So it says, you know, it could be that a person is, again, walking by a Beit Knesset, he doesn't even process what's being heard, he could have been hearing a donkey braying or something else. So the Gemara is teaching us you have to at least process what you are hearing. It goes on a bit, but for time's sake, we're going to stop here. And finally, the last line, though, is Amar Le Rabbi Zera Leshamei Ikaven V'Takali. Rabbi Zera used to say to the person who attended to him, put your mind to the act and blow shofar for me. So the reason that line appears later in the sugya, the reason I included it is because much of this source, the majority of this Gemara, is implying that no level of kavana, no level of intention is necessary. Only this one line by Rabbi Zera is perhaps implying that kavana is necessary. So, first of all, does Rabbi Zera's statement inherently mean that kavana is necessary?
Yeah.
Okay, but that's the person doing the mitzvah. Correct, but... Okay, so what you're pointing out is perhaps the person hearing doesn't have to have any intent, but on some level the person blowing does. Even though the person blowing is on some level, there's a funny relationship between how the mitzvah is being fulfilled. So he's not saying that the listener has to have kavana, but he's saying at least the person blowing. Yeah.
Well, he's in charge of the situation, so he could say, well, I feel like you're supposed to have kavana, so have kavana.
Okay. That's another important point.
We're supposed to blow shofar, but hear Megillah. So the kavana has to be to hear. I don't know if you have to hear every word, you know, probably why you walked out when you didn't.
Right.
But hearing the shofar is not the same as blowing it, so it wouldn't require the same kavana. That's what I'm hearing.
Right, except in this case, first of all, shofar and Megillah are first equated in the Gemara, that one who passes by the Beit Knesset just needs to sort of process that they are hearing it on some level, even if they don't have kavana, and they are yotzei. And it's only Rabbi Zera who seems to say, I want some level of kavana here. Okay, I also think what's complicated about the Rabbi Zera line, and this comes up in Rishonim discussing him, is that it gets into the whole struggle of the relationship of someone, of a shaliach for a mitzvah, someone fulfilling the mitzvah for you. So it's hard to draw conclusions just about your standard mitzvah observance. Okay, how is, besides, so According to most opinions in this Gemara, mitzvot einan srichot kavana. Mitzvot don't require kavana. How is kavana being defined, though? When the assumption that you might need kavana, what is the kavana that you might need? That the Gemara suggests. Okay, awareness, although that's not labeled as kavana exactly. That's labeled as hearing it, which is all that's demanding. The possibility of needing kavana is rejected by the Gemara. But I want to know what is being rejected even. What level of kavana is sort of the hava amina that you would need that this Gemara seems to reject?
Intent that you're doing a mitzvah.
Okay. Intent that you are doing a mitzvah. Now, how would you describe that kavana? What? I would also say minimal kavana. When we're in our kids or us are in school growing up and our teachers say have kavana, we assume that they mean a little bit more than just know that you're doing a mitzvah, have intention to do a mitzvah. So the kavana that we're discussing with mitzvot tzricho kavana is the most minimal level here. And still, even that minimal level seems to be that the Gemara is saying even that is unnecessary. Okay, so we're going to, and just to support that's what the Gemara meant, let's look at source 2, qualifying both positions. Okay? The Rashba says, "V'od demash amru mitzvot srichot kavana, eino ela shikaven libo latseit v'lo ya'aseh kemitaseik ba'alma." Even those that say that mitzvot require kavana, says the Rashba, it's only the kavana that's required is only that you have kavana to fulfill the mitzvah, and that you are not just happening to do the mitzvah by chance, falling upon the mitzvah. Being a yoetz, that I can't help but give you one other example that's nidah related. The Shulchan Aruch says that if a woman goes to the mikvah just to cool off, she wants to swim, it's a hot day, I'm going to go, you know, take a little swim, she fulfills her obligation. She is Tahora from going to the mikveh that way, meaning without intention. So now that obviously is assuming the shita of mitzvot einan srichot kavana. Mitzvot don't require kavana. But the point is that those who feel mitzvot do require kavana, it's still a very low level. It's just the level of acknowledging that I am now doing a mitzvah. I am trying to fulfill a mitzvah. I'm not just falling upon this action. Now this really flies in the face of everything that I was taught or assumed, and sort of almost a modern Orthodox approach we take. You know, I always have students who, if you ask them, why aren't you davening? Why aren't you taking more interest? They'll say, you know, there's no point. I don't really know what I'm saying. I don't know the words, or I don't... And that, to them, is a reason not to daven. Because they're pretty much... Their argument is, what is the point of doing an action if it has no meaning? If I don't know what it's all about? And I think that in our communities, we have believed in there being meaning behind action. We don't usually take an educational approach of just chant lots of psukim and mishnayot mean in a non-meaningful way, but we want our students, we want our children to focus on what it means, what it's all about, how it affects me. So this concept that a mitzvah could be accomplished without any kavana, or that the kavana required is so minimal, at first glance at least, seems to fly in the face of what we have always assumed to be the primary importance. So I want to see if that really is true. So first, if you look at the Me'iri on source 3, he points out importantly, and everyone agrees to this, that the Hugam came, Sha'af Lemi Sha'amar Mitzvot in Srichot Kavana, Lo Amarza Ela B'Dieved. Those who, even according to those who think mitzvot do not require kavana, this is only in terms of the minimal fulfillment. This is only b'dieved. I think that's what you were saying before, that of course everyone would agree, someone else said there are different levels in the Rambam. There are different levels of kavana, there are different levels of intention. And even if one can fulfill a mitzvah without any intent, even to an awareness that they're doing a mitzvah, it obviously is not the ideal way. That's number one. Also, if you look at this Sefer HaIkarim in source 4, Klal gadol yihyeh biyadecha be'asiyat ha-mitzvot shehakol halach achar kavanat halev. Kemasha katuv chazal rachmana liba bayi. It is an important principle for our mitzvah performance that the heart determines everything. And as Chazal wrote, what God really desires is our heart. So, first of all, this could be seen on the one hand as a rationale for mitzvot srichot kavana, that mitzvot really do require kavana. But I also think it can be seen as a rationale for that even if you can fulfill your obligation without kavana, your technical obligation, remember that in order to really do something, there are two ways to see mitzvot. There's the technical fulfillment. But if we want to really do a mitzvah right, if we really want to accomplish something, obviously, putting our heart into it, putting our intent into it, in whatever way that particular mitzvah demands, maybe just focusing on what God is asking of us or focusing on the words, if it's tefillah, is really what it's all about. Okay, so once we understand that it's only b'dieved that mitzvot don't require kavana, kavana shebalev is obviously important. How can we understand what is the rationale behind the concept of mitzvot einan srichot kavana? Why would we say that mitzvot don't require kavana? Why not just demand that there be a focus on God? Why not just demand that there be more of an awareness? So, source 5, from the Sfat Emet. It's really a Kabbalistic idea. I'm going to read the underlined part. V'nira shebe'emet b'chol ma'aseh ha-mitzvah gufa b'li kavana ha-oseh na'aseh mizeh inyan gavoa shekach tala ha-kadosh baruch hu dvarim elyonim b'ma'aseh ha-tachtonim. So he says, in truth, every mitzvah, all mitzvot accomplish something important, something big, even without the kavana. Even without the kavana of the person doing it. Because God, or Tala HaKadosh Baruch Hu Dvarim Elyonim B'Maaseh Tachtonim, it's almost like saying the matters in heaven for God are dependent on the matters down here in this world. In other words, there's this Kabbalistic notion of our actions affecting God, of our actions having this direct impact on God. And that's what the Sfat Emet is suggesting. Another idea that I think resonates a lot is Source 6, Rav David ben Rav Baruch Kalanimus, Adam Mechavein, Gam im eno osezot beofen muda, nishmato hi hamekavenet. That a person achieves kavana, even if he's not consciously directing his mind towards having kavana, even if he's not consciously trying to do the mitzvah, their soul is still having kavana. It's this kind of idea that when our actions affect the inner being that we are. A version, although slightly different, of acharei ha-pe'ulot nimshachot ha-levavot, that after one's actions comes one's heart. Even if you do something without proper intent or without intent at all, it guides you, it takes you, it affects you, and brings you to a certain place. And the Me'iri kind of has a similar notion in Source 7, where he says that when you do, it's impossible to do a mitzvah, it's impossible to do a command of the Torah without being a little bit affected, without v'lo yit'orer libo me'at, without his heart being stirred or aroused a little bit. Every mitzvah, every action affects us in that way. So, I thought about this. When you think about the shofar, even if a person, wasn't particularly observant, and he happened to just be in an area where he hears shofar, he has no concept of being commanded in things, no concept of caring to fulfill a mitzvah, but he might know he's a Jew, and he might have heard what a shofar is. The sound of the shofar has an effect that it can stir something in a person. We don't know how. So perhaps that is the justification for fulfilling the mitzvah, even if one doesn't have intent. It also reminded me of Chabad and their whole mission. This past Sukkot, I during Chol HaMoed Sukkot, I took my kids into the city and we went to see a Broadway show. And I'm walking around Times Square and there are Chabadniks everywhere trying to get people to bench lulav and etrog. And some people, you see the different reactions. You see some people who, first of all, really wouldn't have thought to do the mitzvah, but they're excited to have the opportunity. I saw one Israeli scream at them, "Go away from me, I don't want this." And then you see the people who, they kind of have they almost look like they're humoring Chabad. Like, "Oh, okay, fine, I'll do it." You might have a sense that they don't think of themselves necessarily as fulfilling an obligation in that moment that they're taking the lulav and etrog. But I understand Chabad's mission reading this source, that you don't know the way that that action is affecting them on some level. So these are some of the rationales given for why mitzvot don't require kavana. But what I think is the most noteworthy thing about all the reasons given is that there is an element, except maybe the Sfat Emet, but there's an element of assuming that there is kavana. That we can say mitzvot einan tzricho kavana because even when you are not aware of the kavana, there's a little bit of kavana there.
What is the concept of lo lishma, right?
That's, I think that's very related, certainly, to Source 6. That it's a similar concept, what I mentioned before, of acharei ha-pe'ulot nimshachot ha-levavot, after the actions comes the heart, is another expression that is similar to mitol shel lo lishma. Right. Absolutely. Or it also sort of sets the stage. I always try to tell my students that You know, nobody, when we depends on what level of kavana you demand, you know, but nobody can have total kavana or the level of kavana that they want all of the time. But you're definitely not going to have kavana if you don't even open the sitter, if you don't get yourself to that point. You have to start somewhere. So, yeah. Now, next section is not all mitzvot are created equal. So this, we were discussing in the very beginning when I asked you, you know, do mitzvot require kavana? You pointed out, well, obviously it depends on the mitzvah. So Tosfot Rabbeinu Yonah says the same thing. V'yesh lomar da'afilu misha sover ein srichot kavana, hane mili b'davar shiyesh bo ma'asa. And he says, there are those that think, even according to the opinion, that mitzvot don't require kavana, that's when there's a ma'asa. Sheha ma'asa bimkom kavana. Because when there is an action, like I take lulav and etrog, like blowing shofar, then the action is, takes the place of the kavana, in a sense. Kegon netilat lulav damrinan midag vei nafak vei, aval b'mitzvot shetalui b'amira levad vadai tzricho kavana, sheha amira hi baliv. So, again, when he says about lulav, that the moment we have this notion, the moment you pick up the lulav already, you fulfill the mitzvah. But when it comes to an amira balev, something that is just an amira, that is just davening or words that you say, that amira has to come from the heart. That has to, that obviously requires kavana. So, and when we speak about different levels, we definitely see that in mitzvot like Shema and Shemona Esrei, that you can't really fulfill your obligation in Shema or Shemona Esrei without kavana, and not just kavana that here I am about to fulfill a mitzvah, but a deeper level of kavana. But we restrict it not to the entire thing. With Shema, we say just the first pasuk in order to fulfill Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, that you have to really have concentration on the first line of Shema. That's why we cover our eyes to block out all else, to really focus on the words of Shema to fulfill accepting the yoke of heaven. And in Shemona Esrei, on the first bracha of Shemona Esrei, that's when the demand is most, that you understand each word you're saying and have kavana. So there are definitely different kinds of mitzvot. And another area where the distinction is made, and this will bring us back to our story, back to our point of Megillah, is a distinction is often made between mitzvot deoraita and mitzvot derabanan. The problem is that the Rishonim argue about which requires which. So you have, always in Judaism, there's always a good debate. So some Rishonim say mitzvot deoraita, tzrichot kavana, mitzvot derabanan don't. Mitzvot from the Torah require kavana, mitzvot derabanan don't. And that's the majority opinion, but a few Rishonim say the exact opposite, that mitzvot deoraita, the action of the mitzvah itself is the essence, but a mitzvah derabanan, a mitzvah from the rabbis, can only be fulfilled when there is kavana. So in the Gemara we saw that there was an assumption that Megillah did not require kavana. Remember, you were walking past the shul and you heard Megillah. If you had enough intention just to hear, not even to fulfill the mitzvah, you fulfilled your obligation. But we don't seem to paskin that way. Source 10, I didn't label it, it's the Rambam Mishnah Torah, Hilchot Megillah. Kriyat HaMegillah Bizmana Mitzvah Asei Midivrei Sofrim, V'Hadvarim Yiduim Shehi Takanat HaNeviim, V'Hakol Chayavim B'Kriyata Anashim V'Nashim V'Garim V'Avadim M'Shocharim. So when it comes to Megillah, everyone is obligated, and it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan. And the Rambam goes on to say in Source 11 that im kiven et libo, this is the end of the first line. Well, I'm sorry, I'll start in the beginning. Hakore et ha-Megillah belo kavana lo yatsa. If you read the Megillah without kavana, you do not fulfill your obligation. Ketzad haya kotva or dorsha or magia im kiven et libo latzeit bekriyazo yatsa v'im lo kiven libo lo yatsa. So if, for example, you were a sofer, one who writes Torahs or Megillahs, if you were writing it or explaining it or checking it, if you had intention to fulfill your mitzvah in Megillah, you fulfill it, but if not, you do not. However, very interestingly, the Rambam says, Kara v'hu mitnamen, ho'il v'lo nirdam b'shena yatsa. If one reads it while dozing off, nodding off a little, he fulfills his obligation since he is not sound asleep. I was really surprised to read this, but I was really thankful because especially when we have to read Megillah twice each year, I have to admit, there have been moments where you just blank out for a moment. And then I've always wondered, oh my gosh, did I fulfill my obligation? I physically was in the room, I heard it, but I kind of blanked out. So again, if you were sleeping, you don't fulfill it. But if you lose concentration, the Rambam says you do fulfill it, your obligation. Now I wanted to mention the idea that women and avadim are obligated in Kriyat HaMegillah. There sort of are two reasons often given for this obligation. The classic one is, anyone know? What? Afhein hayu be'oto hanes. That women were also involved or present in the miracle. Some also say that the idea of everyone being obligated is an extension of Pirsumei Nisa. That there are a number of places where we have an obligation to be Mefarseim et Hanes. Classically, the most prominent example is Hanukkah, where we have to do Pirsumei Nisa. But Megillah is another reason. It's why we read Megillah in a minyan. Technically, you can fulfill your obligation of Megillah just reading from a scroll in your own home, but it is a better fulfillment of Pirsumei Nisa when we read it in public all together. And the more inclusive, where women are involved, where every member of the community is involved, the more Pirsumei Nisa is accomplished. And I think in understanding our relationship with Megillah, that's an important point. Okay, so we see that we have this obligation in Megillah. We know it to be strict, and yet we've seen that it does require kavanah, but perhaps no more kavanah than any other mitzvah. You require kavanah, just that I am fulfilling the mitzvah. So where does our fixation on Megillah and our anxiety over Megillah come from? Well, if you flip the page and we look at the Aruch HaShulchan, Ve'im chiser lishmora afila teva achat lo yatsa. V'day behakavana latzeit bitchila. So the Einot Tzarech Lechavein Bechol Teva Latzeit. So he makes clear that there are two separate things. There's Kavana, and when it comes to Kavana, yes, the only thing that is necessary is this Kavana in the beginning to fulfill the mitzvah. But there is also the obligation to hear each word. And if one word is missed, even one word, one does not fulfill his or her obligation. So how do we deal with this? So first of all, I didn't want to leave anyone hanging with what are we going to do on a practical level if we're ever in this situation. And people are often in this situation. So source 13, it just mentions, V'ashrei mi sheyeshel megillah kashera lo ule ishto be'ezrat nashim gam kein. Prima Gadim says, the best scenario is that when you're sitting there listening to the Megillah, that each person has their own scroll, like an actual Megillah before them, a man and a woman. And that is because the ideal way also to deal with perhaps missing a word is to be reading from the scroll, since that is the way the mitzvah is accomplished. Most of us don't. It can be, you definitely, sources speak about being able to fulfill one's obligation by catching up using a regular book as well. So you have to be there at the beginning, but if someone coughs loudly in your ear, or a kid starts crying, or whatever it is that makes you miss a moment, then you can just read along to yourself quickly until you catch up to the place where the kore is. Yeah.
But how does that correlate to what you said before regarding if you doze off, like if you daydream, you're not really hearing every word,
right.
Or where the Rama says a person who errs wrong readings, you're not really hearing every word because the word was incorrect.
Well, you heard the word if it's incorrect, it just was slightly incorrect. I mean, we have that with laning sometimes, but it depends how incorrect. But so first of all, with catching up, the idea is the majority, you can't catch up like the entire Megillah. But if you miss, a small percentage, then you can catch up. I don't know. I don't think that I didn't find any source where Poskim like set a specific percentage per se. Obviously, 50% would already be rove, and that would make it not good. But meaning, if you missed 50% of the Megillah and you had to catch up on your own, like read on your own more than 50%, that would definitely be problematic because then you're not hearing a majority of it. But short of that, I don't know if there's, I'm not sure about that, about the percentage. But there's also tuning out. You don't necessarily need to catch up. Missing a word, you need to catch up. Our brains are such that we might tune out for a minute, but we still heard it. But if you physically couldn't hear it, then you definitely have to catch up. If I tune out, I like to catch up a little too. But, alright, I want to end with this last source, which gives some insight about, again, why though the fixation on the words of the Megillah. What's it all about? And bringing a little meaning to our whole discussion about Kavana, wrapping it up. So this is from Rav Yossi Tzvi Rimon. First he gives a halachic explanation. He says, Hasiba lekach shehi shebeod kriyat haTorah hi chova hamotelet al hatzibor, the Megillah hachiyav motel al kol yachid v'yachid. V'lachin kol echad chayav lishmoa et kol ha-megillah mitchila v'ad sofa. So when it comes to Kriyat HaTorah, the obligation falls upon the tzibor. So the tzibor has to read every word of the Torah. Like if the Baal Koreh missed a couple of words, it would be problematic and we would have to do it again. But if you walk out, you as an individual, from leaning, you don't have an obligation to hear each and every word. The tzibor has the obligation. It's different with Megillah. It's a tricky thing with Megillah. On the one hand, like we said, the tzibor creates this pirsume nisa, experience, but the mitzvah, the obligation, is on each and every individual. So that is the reason why each and every individual has to hear every word from beginning to end, according to this source. And the next reason he gives is interesting. He says, Nira, shedavka mishum shehanes shebim Megillah hu nes nistar, harei shekol nekuda ketana, af im hir nira'et shulit, yesh ba hakavana elokit shel hamitziyut. Hakvana elokit shel hamitziyut. Okay, so he says, because the nes, when it comes to Megillah, was a nes nistar, a hidden miracle, to symbolize that each and every word, each and every letter has this meaning, this is sort of like a symbolic divine orchestrating. It symbolizes the divine orchestration of what happened, of the miracle. We're recognizing, in other words, our recognizing or our fixation on the details is a way of recognizing God's details, of God in the details of the Megillah, and recognizing the significance of each and every action and the way that it unfolded. So I thought this was conceptually a beautiful idea, and it also reminded me that of the Gemara that says that although we all accepted the Torah at Har Sinai, at the time of Purim there was a second accepting of the Torah. Because at Har Sinai, it was like God held the mountain over our heads. Because God's miracles were so obvious, were so present, that what choice did anyone have but to believe in God and to accept the Torah? But at the time of Purim, without the obviousness, then we accepted it in a different way. And therefore, when we think of every Jew, women, men, every Jew being present at Megillah reading and attentively being hearing each word, it's almost like reenacting that acceptance of the Torah. I want to conclude with this thought. There sometimes are two different approaches to mitzvot in general. Kind of this rational approach that I mentioned my students possess. That what value does a mitzvah have if there's no kavanah, if there's no feeling behind it? And that certainly resonates. And then this idea that we also saw in the sources of a mitzvah having inherent value in and of itself, the action being valuable. And in the Megillah in particular, we see two different things being balanced. We see this idea of the fulfillment of the mitzvah being through hearing each word, being aware, being very present in the Megillah. And then what we have is, even according to the rationalist approach, another value at Megillah sometimes. What about the kids that are there? What about them enjoying the spirit of Purim and being present and shaking their groggers, even if it seems interruptive or annoying sometimes? Or it might even sacrifice a bit of our obligation. And what we have to do is balance these competing values, because both are pirsum meisa, hearing each word and understanding the nes, and also balanced with the community and the children and some of the distractions that can come along at Purim. And in this way, I think Megillah is a nice model for our struggle and our need for balance when performing mitzvot, that we want to do it in the ideal way, with the highest level of kavana that we're able to muster, and we sometimes have so much pulling at us. And we sometimes find ourselves trying to do the mitzvah in a less than perfect way, in an imperfect way. And hopefully we can be kind to ourselves, strive always for what's best, but do perfect mitzvot in an imperfect world. Have a great day.